From Beijing to Berlin, from Singapore to South Carolina, from Cape Town to Canada, the world turns on business and commerce. And where there is such industry, disagreements are bound to happen. Sometimes these disagreements are resolved. For the rest of the time, they end up in the capable hands of professionals around the world. The dynamic and interesting stories of these individuals is what you will hear on this show, Tales of the Tribunal. Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with Chris Campbell. I am your host, Chris Campbell, here to tell you another tale, another story, another epic of another person working in the wide world of international dispute resolution. Now, speaking of the wide world of international dispute resolution, I am somewhere else in the world. Last week, if you were listening to the show, you know that I was in London. If you were not listening to the show, shame on you. How dare you? How dare you not be listening on a weekly basis? But I'm kidding, of course. I am in Zurich, Switzerland for the 11th annual AIJA conference. Now, have you ever wondered what does AIJA stand for? It stands for Association Internationale des Jeunes Avocats. I just butchered that. Forgive me, dear listeners. I speak some languages. This appears to be French. It is not my first language, but I digress. That is why I'm in Zurich for this week. The conference kicks off tomorrow evening. That will be Thursday, with the rest of the events going on Friday and Saturday, and then I will be heading out on Sunday. So, as I mentioned, and as a brief way of summary, some of the topics that will be covered, the panel that I will sit on is towards greater, well, the general topic of the show, let me start there, is toward greater efficiency in international arbitration. So my panel, my topic will be how has arbitration become too expensive? We being the other faculty during the conference, will cover faster, higher, stronger, shaping efficient procedures in international arbitration. There will be a workshop on client perspectives in international arbitration. And then Saturday, we'll kick off with an interesting topic called A Brave New World, how technology can improve efficiency. And then finally, there will be who pays the bill, allocating cost and fees throughout the arbitration. So about my panel in specific, I will be joined by two fantastic speakers, Ms. Alina Leovianu of the ICC in Paris and Ms. Ewelina Wetris of K&L Gates, moderated by none other than Ms. Nadia Smahi herself. And we'll be making up the panel that will start it all off. So unfortunately, if you're not here yet, I am afraid you may have missed this occasion. But nevertheless, I'm sure someone will do a write-up about it and you'll be able to hear about it that way. In other news, moving on just to another note, there is an exciting event coming up in Vienna, Austria. And listener, I want you to pay close attention. This is your final opportunity to sign up for this event. Well, at least that we will let you know about. Registrations end on June 30th for this exciting event, which is a look into mediation, negotiation, and dispute management skills that is hosted by the International Disputes Professional Academy, the Negotiation Academy for short. It'll be going on from July 16th to July, from July 11th to July 16th. And it will give you some high-level training on using dispute management skills on how to enhance your career. I'll be there, and I hope to see you there, too. I'll post a link to it in the show notes of today's episode. Now, that actually provides a great segue in today's episode. Today's guest is none other than the woman leading that charge herself, Ms. Claudia Winkler. Claudia is the founder of the Negotiation Academy. She's a Harvard alum, a champion for diversity and women's empowerment around the world. And we had a fascinating conversation. She's just an interesting person, as most of our guests are. We talked about work-life balance, what it's like to start your own organization, your own business. We talked working out. Shout-outs to Squattober, Sornex Exercises, and the Pen and Paper Strength app, all lifestyles that I follow when I'm working out. But that is not the topic of today's conversation. Again, we're talking about someone that is involved in the world of international dispute resolution, but not necessarily arbitration. In fact, more so on the negotiation and mediation side. So this episode with Claudia is a fantastic dive into her past, how she got to where she is, and what she's doing today. So sit back. I hope to see you on the other side of the show for some footnotes and endnotes, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome to Tales of the Tribunal. This is your host, Chris Campbell, and I have with me today a very special guest, Ms. Claudia Winkler. She's going to talk about a path that's not quite arbitration, but nonetheless relevant to the world of international dispute resolution. Welcome to the show, Claudia.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Yes. So, Claudia, tell us, what is the deal? What is the dish? Who are you? Where are you from? What's your path been up to so far? We want to know the details.
Well, I mean, my background's in law. That happened, so to say. My parents grow wine actually here in Austria, about an hour outside of Vienna. But at the age of 14, I decided this wasn't going to be my path, and I started working with law firms. I was tall, I didn't notice I was only 14. So I've done this ever since. And then I just decided I was going to go to law school and decided that I wanted to do an international degree. And one thing led to another. At a certain point, I had decided I definitely want to go to one of the Ivy League schools. So I just nerded out on being a lawyer for, I don't know, some 5-6 years until I had all these degrees.
A short detour.
It's going to be useful with something is what I figured in the end. And I ended up becoming a negotiation trainer. Because luckily for me, at least in my last law degree, when I realized I wasn't going to be a lawyer, I ended up in the Harvard Negotiation Project. And I then saw how everything I'd done before started making sense, because none of the things I tried so many things. Like I tell my students all the time, you have to go and try out what is for you and where can you really apply your skills to the best potential. And I had tried law firms, I tried international institutions, I tried working for universities. I really did the whole spiel of dispute resolution of law. I tried everything, so to say, and I realized none of them was just optimal for me to use what I'm best at. And when I sat at the Harvard Negotiation Project and I saw the people who teach there, it hit me. I was like, this is me. This is my career. This is my future. I'm going to become a negotiation trainer. And that's been going ever since.
Well, sure. And you've just said a lot.
You asked a lot of questions.
I did ask a lot of questions. That's fair enough. Fair enough. Let's clarify. What exactly is a negotiation trainer? What does that mean?
Well, I work with lawyers mainly to help them explore how they can optimize how they're communicating with their clients, but also with the other side. So negotiation isn't only if you sit very formally across the table, the way most people would imagine negotiations when they think about it. But negotiation is every bit of communication you do with your own team, within your own firm, and also especially with your client. And so much of client satisfaction has been shown in research is connected to the way you're communicating to them, to the way you're managing their dispute, much more so than often the outcome, which is incredible to most lawyers, because instinctively they will think their job is to get the best outcome they can. But client satisfaction has actually been shown to be much more connected to the way the process is run. So besides the hardcore negotiation and bargaining skill, I train a lot of lawyers simply on how can you get your clients to be better satisfied with the interest-based negotiation principles that Harvard has laid the foundations for the last 40 years.
Interesting. So is that something that you kind of always knew that you wanted to do? Or was it something along the lines of you went to the flea market one day and you really enjoyed getting good deals and realized you were good at negotiation? You know, where did that interest come from?
It happened at Harvard. It wasn't something I had on my screen. Dispute resolution was not very big when I was in law school. We had an arbitration course, but that was about it. I didn't know about mediation. There was certainly no negotiation training. And it was only during my LLM that I was lucky enough to get a slot on the negotiation program at Harvard, and then sitting in there realizing this is bringing so much more value to people's skills than any subject matter knowledge that I could possibly teach. So I had been on a tenure track position for European Union law, so I had been teaching a lot before. But it was then that I realized with something like negotiation skills, I can actually give people much more leverage on the skills they already have, because incrementally improving any subject matter legal skill that you might have is not going to set you apart anymore. In the world that most successful lawyers are working in, at that level of work that they do, everyone is good at the law. Everyone knows what they're doing. So getting your 1-3% smarter in that field of law is not going to set you apart anymore, and certainly not as much as you can make a difference if you become a better negotiator, better communicator, if you know better how to understand what your clients really want to achieve.
Wow. So negotiation, you've made it into an art form, so to speak, your career. So you've taken us through your schooling and how you got your interest in negotiating. How did you end up from Harvard back here to Austria, Vienna?
I got kicked out.
You got kicked out?
Not of Harvard, not Harvard, out of the U.S.
Yeah.
No, so I was a Fulbright scholar, so I had a two-year visa. So I had a 1 year at Harvard, and then I worked in the New York International Arbitration Center for another year over in Manhattan. So, and that was it. It was the 2 years, and then I had this mandatory return home clause that Fulbright blesses you with to bring back American culture to Austria. So
they exported you back home.
They exported me back home. I was trying to get around it, but they did kick me out.
All right. And now you're with what's called the Negotiation Academy. Is that right?
Yes.
What is that? I mean, can you tell listeners about that?
That is my negotiation training company. So I started this a few years ago when I started doing... So my main work day will be training in-house. So I do a lot of trainings for big law firms, but then also conferences and universities. And the negotiation training also gives me the Negotiation Academy also gives me the platform to run online trainings for people who cannot usually reach negotiation training. So I do a lot of work in Southeast Asia, and negotiation training there, especially for students, the way you have it in the US, is just not available. So I've started the platform to also enable students to be able to learn negotiation skills online.
All right, so you're an entrepreneur too, adding that to the other list of things, hats that you've worn.
Career building is an entrepreneurial skill nowadays. I think you have to be to some extent, whatever career you're choosing.
I think that's true. I think a wise man once said that.
I think that sounds similar to what you said yesterday.
Yeah, yeah,
man. What you're saying. Yeah.
For the sake of clarity, I literally used those exact words or similar words yesterday in a panel here at the Wiesmuth.
I felt instantly connected to you when you said that. That's what I always say.
All right. A little inside joke there. But sure. So that's interesting. So a lot of times, starting your own business especially can be all consuming. And that can be, you know, what you spend the great majority of your time and day doing. Do you have any other extracurricular projects, or is it mostly the Negotiation Academy? And if so, what's coming up for the Negotiation Academy that we should be looking out for?
That's, again, a lot of questions, so you're going to stop me because I have a lot of answers.
No, go, please. The floor is yours.
Well, extracurricular, in curricular, for negotiation, it's so diverse that it doesn't feel like I'm doing one thing all the time, because there's the trainings that I do for law firms, there's the conferences, there's the online course, and then we've also started adding events where we do live trainings for a week, because we found that it's what students and young practitioners like the most, because they can actually get together and meet people and learn in a live environment. So we've also started doing this in Vienna. But because it's so diverse, you don't realize how much you're working, and there is a lot of hours that go in there eventually, as it is for all dispute resolution careers. So I do try to do things on the side. Well, my partner and I are both pretty much workaholics, and we're trying to work on that, trying to get some hobbies. Every now and then we sit down and we're like, we've got to get a hobby now. Come on, let's pick a hobby.
So what are some of the hobbies? What are some of the things you guys have decided upon?
Well, we try something new every year and see how if it sticks. So we started rock climbing 2 years ago.
Okay.
We did that pretty intensively for a while. New York has a great climbing center.
Really?
When we were there in Brooklyn, the Rock, I think it's called, where we went pretty much every
creative
day.
Creative name? The Rock?
That, yeah.
Okay.
Or the Cliff or something like that. So we started that a while ago and then moved on and started deciding, oh, we're going to sail around the world. You know, big goal setting, as I tell to my students.
And you guys already did that? Or
neither, neither of us knows how to sail. We get sick on boats like hell.
Okay.
So we decided, let's learn that. That should be a nice hobby that gets us out into the fresh air and the water and the sun. So last year we started doing a sailing license, and not so sure anymore if we're going to sail around the world, because it turned out to be quite exhausting to be in a boat on the Atlantic Ocean for couple of days and nights especially in a row, but maybe we'll keep it for the holidays. So we do try to pick up new hobbies that force us to leave our offices, so to say, because we don't have children yet, so there's no other force that comes in there. So we try to pick something new every year and make sure it remains a good balance.
Well, that is certainly a way to have an adventurous lifestyle, I think.
And that too.
Yeah, sure. So let's see, how about in your field in particular, are there any projects that you're working on that are not directly related to the Negotiation Academy? Anything else that's coming up that you'd like folks to know about?
We're running a new program this summer together with Singapore Management University, the Dispute Professional Academy. This is new in the sense that we've seen that a lot of students are now interested in learning about arbitration, mediation, negotiation. But it's taught and it's being used in a very isolated way that people learn how to be a mediator. But the reality is you don't go out of law school, you become a mediator. So these skills are not, so students don't know how to apply these skills in the practical real life setting. And Mike is also co-teaching this new academy. And so is Johannes Wilhelm from Jones Day, who has been talking for the last 3 years in our conferences. He's been speaking about a new school of dispute management, where we teach young practitioners of how to connect the dots and how to connect these skills to actually be able to walk parties through a complex dispute from beginning to end, from choosing the best method to choosing the best frame and strategy of how to walk them through to actually be there as their counsel to all the way to the end to create a win-win solution. So having this complete set of skills of how do you actually walk a case through a full dispute is something that we found is not taught in the practical way that young practitioners would need to see it to be able to apply it. And it's actually what's most valuable for firms, for in-house and for law firms to have as a skill when they have new practitioners coming in. So we've started doing a new academy that's called Dispute Professional Academy in Vienna this summer. This is one of the new projects I'm working on to keep myself busy.
Well, fantastic. And we'll include a link to all these things. If you have any specific links to your projects that you just discussed, we'll make sure to include that in the show notes. One question I've got is, having lived in two different legal systems and been experiencing two different legal systems, does your training skew more towards common law or civil law, or are these kind of general principles that can be applicable in either?
Luckily, there are general principles that are applicable to any jurisdiction. So I've trained. It was something that I was curious about at the beginning as well, because my training didn't start out in Europe, because I always wanted to move to Australia. When after I had to leave the US, I was like, I'm not going back to the US now. I'm going the other way now. So I wanted to move to Australia, and I always spent my winters in warmer fields of the planet. So I spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, and I started doing a lot of trainings there. And it was surprising to me at the beginning as well, because I thought, well, how is it going to work here? How will the negotiation training that I learned in the US be applicable to people in India, for example, where I train seven of the largest law firms by now? And to my very pleasant surprise, we have more as negotiators, as lawyers, we have more in common when we apply negotiation skills than what separates us, because we all make the same mistakes. And it's not so much about what your legal background is that determines what that is.
Sure. So shifting focus just a little bit, who have been some of the icons, or not maybe not icons, but role models or mentors that you've had throughout your career, some influential figures?
I did the most, for my career, the most influential figure was my doctoral thesis supervisor. And I'm very open about being very proactive in connecting with people that I find very interesting. So I have no problem cold calling, cold emailing, getting to the people that I find interesting. And I keep saying everyone should be doing this. And I did this from the very beginning when I started studying law. Before I started studying law, I had already set my goal that I want to go to Harvard. And I had already done my research of who in Austria had been there, what scholarships have they had, who had recommended them, and so on. So I was very strategic about going to the university I ended up with and studying European Union law, because there was a professor who was there, a young woman at that time. I think she must have been 35 when I started there. And she had been to Harvard. She had had a Fulbright scholarship, and she was teaching at that university. So I went to that university. I studied there. I made sure I'm sitting in the first row of her course, and I started making the connection. So she was one of my biggest role models, and she did become my boss, my thesis supervisor. She was one of the inspirations from the early start.
What was her name?
Margit Karolos. Unfortunately, she died of breast cancer just after my doctoral thesis. So that was a very big damp in for everyone, because she was so young. So it was also a wake up call sort of for the community around her. She had worked very hard to be where she was. She was a professor at 39, and that was the track I was on. So it also gave me some sense of gratitude to be able to have learned from her not only how to push far and get far, but also how to take yourself back and take time out for yourself, because none of this is worth anything if your body and your health are not keeping up with it.
Well, that's true, and I'm sorry for your loss. Obviously that was a huge it sounds like a shaping mentor relationship for you, or sort of a guiding path. Were there any others that you can recall from your career?
There's so many, you know, there's so many people that have helped me.
Sure. Yeah. Don't
want to like picking out one is really hard. So she was one of the earliest, which is why, her name comes to me first. There's Edna Sussman in New York, who was the person who brought me to New York after my Harvard degree. She was the one who brought me there and opened up so many possibilities for me to learn about mediation, to learn about negotiation, to go to mediations with her, come to the arbitration center and work there. So she has been a huge role model the way she does things, along with Judge Judith Kay, who I still quote on all of my
workshops. Yeah, sure.
You know Judith Kay?
I'm familiar, yeah.
Everyone in the US. She's a legend. So I learned so much from her about being... she was a female role model, probably not only to women, but to everyone around, of the having this mix of being very assertive for what she wanted, but at the same time so receptive, which is one of the greatest... dances of balance acts as a negotiator. So she's always my example for how to best do that. So she was one of them. Then there's certainly Mike McElroy.
Right. This is
on the role model list. This is not promotion for G or Mike, but it has to be mentioned. He's been such an inspiration because he has relentlessly pushed towards negotiation, mediation, alternative dispute resolution, and he's just so innovative in keeping up with ways how we could improve the system and how we could support people who are already doing it and bring more young people into the field. So he's been a huge inspiration.
Well, sure.
Do you want me to go on? We can do this all day.
Well, I don't want anyone to feel left out, so we'll stop there. And we'll have shout-outs later in the show, but we'll give a quick shout-out now to Mike McElrath, who's listening to this probably from Florence or if he's on the road, which he often is, from somewhere in the world. Okay. Well, leaving that topic for now, what are you reading right now? Anything outside of law or anything outside of negotiation?
I'm a nerd, so I can show you my library after this. There's only negotiation books. There's a bit on business development. There's a bit on marketing. There's every now and then there might be an autobiography. Sure. But that's about it. There's no novels. Certainly no science fiction.
You're not reading Game of Thrones,
There's none of this. My students make fun of me because when we're doing our life events and we live together in this castle in Austria, for example, for a year where I take the Women Leadership Academy out, they will keep having their fun quotes about all these series and they will quote people and things. And I'm just like, what's that? Who's that? And they're just like, oh my God, I cannot believe you don't know about this. I do not.
Well, that's fair. So the next two questions I would generally ask here, as listeners will know, would be, what shows are you watching or what was the last movie you saw? Can you remember any of those things?
Oh my God. So I'm the worst on movies. It feels like Alzheimer. You meet new people every day. I can watch a movie and you'll ask me the next day, what was it about? I can literally not tell you. So movies for me are really, okay, now I need brain dead time. Yeah. There's so much that I don't even recall mostly the next day that I even saw it. It's pretty amazing to myself often. My partner makes a lot of fun of it. But the last thing I started, someone got me hooked to is Modern Family.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Obviously, this is like 10 years ago in the US, but here we're just realizing.
Still relevant.
Europe's 10 years behind on these things. Yeah. So that's one I've enjoyed tremendously. I watch every now and then when brain dead time is about to ring in, but nothing that's really big on the movie side. I don't know when I've been to the cinema last. It must have been 5-10 years.
Wow. Okay.
Makes me feel like I have to get a life.
so no movie references. Got it. How about music? Do you enjoy music? Is that some part of your life?
I enjoy music. I'm not someone who's very picky about it, I must admit. So when my partner comes home, he will put on the music because I will just put on whatever and let it run. He's like, what are you listening to? I'm like, I don't even care as long as there's music. So music's a big part of my life because I like the energy and I can sing along to lyrics where people have asked me when I go to conferences and then you go out, then I'll be the one that can sing along with all the lyrics. I don't even know why I remember this. I don't remember movies that I saw yesterday or what I had for lunch.
But lyrics, you're all about it.
I remember lyrics. Any song you put on, I can remember the lyrics.
So hardcore rap, heavy metal, I'm sure.
Yeah, Eminem, we'll try that out later. I don't know why, but it's pretty mainstream stuff that just gets stuck in my head after it's played on the radio.
Maybe we'll have a bonus feature with Claudia rapping. Stay tuned for that one.
That has to be later on.
absolutely. And you talked about this a little bit early in the interview. What do you do to balance out your mental and physical health, especially being an entrepreneur? Again, it can be all consuming. It can be the kind of thing that's just a daily grind. How do you make sure that you're not running yourself into the ground physically and mentally?
Well, I sleep a lot, and for normal ADR professional standards, I sleep a lot. I have at least 8 hours of sleep a night. I do not function without. This is also one way I realized I was not cut out to go into a law firm.
Sure, yeah, because
I need my sleep, and I will have my sleep, and I can arrange my life around it. So that's one important thing that I've kept. And well, I try to work out. I weightlift.
Oh, you weightlift? Okay, like CrossFit or?
No, like proper.
Proper. Okay, CrossFit listeners, don't email me. Don't send me these comments. No, we have nothing against CrossFit.
I'm not even sure we have this in Europe because I've just been going to the same gym. I think we do. Yeah, I've just been going to the same gym and do my own same deadlifts and squats and whatever I've been.
Do you celebrate Squattober?
No, I did not know about
that is 30 days of straight squatting. It's a ritual I've been celebrating for the past 5 years.
Oh.
Yeah, so we'll have to chat about that.
I'll hit you up for that when October comes
around. Yeah, that's right. Squattober, yeah. Deadlift, December. So.
Oh, wow.
We got all these little things that we do. That's
a
shout-out.
Not that serious about it, as you can probably tell.
That's a shout-out to the Pen and Paper app and Sornex and all you guys over there. Some strong dudes. Anyway, I digress. We've gone off the rails a little bit. So you make sleep and working out a priority. Great.
And good food.
And good food.
Healthy food that I'm lucky if my partner cooks. If not, we're not going to have much healthy food around here. But we try to be home and home cook most of the food. He's a big foodie. He's also an excellent chef. So I've been very lucky in that matter. So we try to eat very healthy because that's one of the little luxuries in life that I think is very important and makes a big difference to how well you can keep your health.
Sure. So let me ask you this question. You're approached by a student or someone fresh out of law school, or maybe someone that's trying to break into the world of dispute resolution more generally. And they say, Claudia, I like your career. I like what you've done. What advice can you give me on how to break into the field?
So I usually tell them to go and have coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And
what brand of coffee?
Not Austria.
Not Austria. Yeah. Okay. Fair.
Go and have coffee because I found when I started out back in New York, the first thing that I did, which was very weird to me at the time, because also my excuse always was, well, in my culture, Austria, Europe, we just don't do that. We don't cold email people to ask for something. But it was fine because it was like, all right, I'm in the US now. Let's just try this out. What's the worst thing that can happen? You feel a bit more free if you're not inside the bounds of your own culture. So I started doing that, emailing people that worked in the field of negotiation, mediation, dispute resolution, and say, hey, I've just come out of this program. I'm a Fulbright scholar. Da da da. I saw you do this and this. How interesting. Can I invite you for coffee at some point? And a lot of people actually replied. So I've started doing this I've done this ever since because it's been one of the most effective ways of learning what's out there. Because our field is not some straightforward career where you go and you have a litigator career or you go into the court system. There's no career path. So you have to learn from people who are in the field what opportunities there are, what are the skills I need to know, what are their paths, how have they gotten where they are. So the way I learned and the way I developed most was by meeting new people and asking them how have they gone from A to B to C and what would they recommend I do so I can find the best match for my skills, because that's what career building is ultimately about. You need to find a great match for what you know are your skills. And in order to do that, because it's such a diverse field, you need to talk to as many people as you can to see what they are doing, what's out there, and how have they gotten to where they are. So have at least 3 coffees a week, or at least send 10, 20 emails a week and take people out for coffee. That's my number one recommendation, because it's the number one way to learn and it's also the number one way to break into the field, because ultimately people want to see who you are and what you stand for. Everyone has great CVs nowadays. It's become just a basic prerequisite. It's not the outstanding CV anymore that gets you into places. I think we also had that at the career panel yesterday. And it's just reality. So you need to meet people and be a person that they feel they would like to work with.
Sure. What non-work/law-related things are you looking forward to in 2019?
Well, there's going to be some weddings, there's going to be some sailing, there's going to be some holidays, some point. The moment someone starts planning it, which hasn't happened yet.
So all the adventures you were discussing before.
So
sure.
Those are all past adventures. So we haven't planned some adventure for this year. It's probably going to be some sailing. There's a Brazil trip coming up that's workation, as we call it. So I often do this type where we go on vacation for a bit and then I go teach at some firms. So there's going to be a Brazil trip, there's going to be an India trip, there's a few of those, but most of, there are hardly any that have not some component of work in there.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I think
entrepreneur's curse.
Yeah, it's something that's woven into the DNA of your life. Sure.
Plus Austrian practicality and efficiency.
Austrian practicality.
All is to blame.
That's fair. So we're approaching the end of this interview. It's 5 o'clock on a Friday. You've ticked all the things off your to-do list. You don't have any client responsibilities for the weekend. No outstanding work. Maybe your partner is also free for the weekend. How are you going to occupy your time on that weekend? You can do anything you'd like.
Go and buy socks.
Go and buy socks. All right. I must admit, that is probably the most creative or interesting answer I've gotten to that question. But that begs so many questions.
We have no time to go shopping. We both hate it. We will never leave and do it unless it's absolutely necessary. So we're always out of socks.
We might have to get some Tales of the Tribunal branded socks and send them to you or something.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Go and buy that missing shelf for the office and go buy those socks. If I was really bored to death, I would finally do that.
Okay.
Because that's what we're pushing off for. Sometimes it's not important until we have nothing to wear anymore in this house.
Well, that's fair enough. Do you want to give any shout-outs? What do you want to say to people at home? Do you have any shout-outs or anything you want to do like that?
No, I think we've had some of the role models.
Yeah.
I need to add, other than Edna and Mike, I need to add Nicolas Pikovits here in Austria, who's been very instrumental to opening up opportunities for negotiation, for mediation. He's very active. And to my mom, if she would have sat down with me, learned the alphabet over 3 days of crying, I don't think I would have gone to Harvard.
No, I think that is part of the Harvard requirements. You got to know the alphabet at least.
It was tough, and she did it for years. So I would have not. I was a dyslexic child, so I would have probably not made it into any proper school if she didn't have the patience to sit down with me and keep studying and keep studying. And at some point it took off, but it took a long time. So there wouldn't have been a chance for me to do anything remotely close to what I do now if it hadn't been for that patience and dedication. So
okay,
I'm grateful for that.
Well, Claudia, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great conversation. We will definitely have to have you on the show again. We wish we had more time now. But why don't you sign us off?
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm Claudia, and there's no disputing it. You're listening to Tales of the Tribunal.
So I hope you enjoyed that episode. Anytime Claudia and I are in the same place, it is a good time. We're always having good conversations, telling funny stories, and it's a good time. So in any case, before we get out of here, there are a couple of footnotes I'd like to give you, listeners. First, as I've said just now, I will be in Zurich until June 30th, then headed back to the good old US of A for the 4th of July. So I'll be in South Carolina and the surrounding areas then. And then I'm down to Miami for just a day or two. So I'll be back. I'll be there until about July 10th or so. So if you're around the area, want to say hello, maybe want to suggest something for the show, or you have something else you'd like to talk about, give me an email at talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. Again, that's talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. Before we get out of here, I'd like to give you one more shout out, one more notice, something you might want to put in your calendar as it's fast approaching and the spots will fill up soon. This is the ABR webinar called The Magic Words, Language Translation and Litigation and Arbitration. So this is a fantastic opportunity to get some insights on practical translation and language interpretation issues that come up during international advocacy. So those could be things like simultaneous translation for expert witnesses, making sure that expert witnesses are correctly translating matters to the tribunal or to the judge. All sorts of topics like that. We have a star-studded cast on the faculty there. Ms. Cheyenne Bao from Hong Kong, Duarte Henrix from BCH in Lisbon, Nicolas Pikowitz from Graf and Pikowitz in Austria, and then Mr. John Branson from Womble Bond Dickinson in Charlotte, North Carolina. And of course, I'm the moderator, so it would be great to have you on the call. Again, spots are filling up soon. If you'd like to sign up for that, we'll have a link to it on the show notes, or you can find it on the ABA's CLE website. Again, it's a free CLE. It'll go from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Eastern on July 11th.
So I hope that you will tune in for that. And if you were not an ABA member, I've gotten some notices that you're having some difficulty registering. We'll just shoot me an email if you're having an issue with that, and I'll be sure to route you to the right direction. In any case, I hope you enjoyed this week's show. And without further ado, you've been listening to Tales of the Tribunal. See you next week.